Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
Pierre McGuire on TSN 690 is brought to you in part by Dagwood Sandwiches and Salads. Bite into Dagwood's fully loaded, fabulous new oven-grilled beef and pepperoni sandwiches. Dagwood's delicious.
A rising shot by Spalding ricochets out of play with 2.2 to go. Period 2, 2-2.
And twos are wild, Doc.
Jeez, I hope Pierre didn't get to Columbus at 2:22 today. That would be weird. How are you?
I'm good, Mitch. How you doing?
All right.
Hey, Mitch, before we get going, you were talking about All-Stars and maybe the lack of conversation about the All-Star game. How about if we salute an All-Star whose birthday it is today?
Sure.
The great Elmer Locke, 97 years of age today.
He is amazing.
He is. So he was asked recently by someone you and I both know who will remain nameless, what's your secret to longevity? What tips do you have? It takes me an hour to eat my breakfast every day, and I eat cornflakes.
That's great. Happy birthday, Elmer Locke.
And awesome.
While we're at it, another Hall of Famer, guy that I like a lot, Mike Bossy, is celebrating a birthday today.
Way to go, Mike.
Yeah, a lot younger than Elmer, but he's getting up there and part of an organization that is one of the great stories through the pre-All-Star break portion of the NHL season.
They're not going anywhere either. They're going to continue to climb. They're good. They're fast. They're deep. I think it's going to come down to, for them, whether Yarrow, Halak can stay healthy enough and fit enough and strong enough to have a real good push in the second half. Because if you can keep it on the rails, their team's built to last. They're a good team.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting to watch how Jack Capuano handles his workload.
Agreed. Absolutely agree. Now, the one thing I can tell you about their team, too, is they have room to be real aggressive at the trade deadline. And it'll be really interesting to see just how they do it, or if they do it. But they do have some room to be very aggressive at the deadline.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions, and these guys will jump in, of course, about that subject. Watching Colorado come back late, Patrick Watt did it again, pulling his goalie with 2.5 minutes to go, and he got the tying goal. Ryan O'Reilly in the middle of things, and they won the game in a shootout over the Bruins. And they're making a charge here late. But there's all this discussion about Ryan O'Reilly and how they're going to have to move him. They can't afford him. Patrice Brisebois said on television this week that when he was working for the Canadiens, Marc Bergevin made an attempt during that holdout to try to get Ryan O'Reilly. Do you see this being resolved this season one way or the other?
I do for Ryan O'Reilly. I just posed the question to you. Now, Ryan can play center or he can play wing. He's a very useful player. And a very talented player. The question I have for you and for Canadians fans that might be wishing this upon the team, do you realize his size? Does he increase your ability to be big down the middle? He's not an overly large person, and he's not real fast. So I don't know where you fit him on your team as it's built right now. Now, if you have to move somebody else to get him that maybe he's replacing, that's different. But right now, he's similar to a lot of what you have.
Yeah, Ryan O'Reilly is a terrific player. He's a competitor, but he's not what the Canadiens have been searching for necessarily.
Right.
Although there's nothing wrong with the question that's attached to the whole Ryan O'Reilly equation is the contract, the next contract.
Right. Well, I don't see him as a $6 to $8 million a year player. I see him more in the 5 to 6 range, and even maybe a little less. But again, this is what happens. All it takes is one offer, and the former general manager of the Calgary Flames, Jay Feaster, made that one offer, which was lunacy. Eventually, I think that's what helped get him fired. But that's all it takes is one offer out there. And once there's one offer, then everything goes haywire. And that's part of the problem when you're dealing with 29 other teams. If you have that one player that everybody kind of covets, but they covet him at too high a price, then it becomes your problem, even though somebody else made the offer. That's the biggest issue you have to deal with.
But from Colorado's perspective, if they remain kind of close or actually get into the top eight, how could they move him?
Oh, I agree with you. Now, I remember about a month ago telling you I misread their defense at the beginning of the year, and I blame myself for that. But they are starting to rally. But part of the reason why they're rallying is Ryan O'Reilly is part of it. Another part of it is the play of Jerome McGinley. And a third part of it, because they just did their game in St. Louis the other day, is Eric Johnson's having a spectacular year on defense. He's going to be at the All-Star game this weekend. He's had a spectacular year for the Colorado Avalanche. So while some of the other defensemen have been a little bit down and haven't been as good as I thought they would be, there are some good stories there. And I think Patty's coaching really well. I was impressed with him the other day. It's one of the few interviews I didn't do during a game because his team was down and they were getting beat bad by St. Louis, and I didn't think it was appropriate to interview him at that time in the game. I wanted him to focus in on his coaching. And I have the ability through my producer to say yes or no on those interviews, and I did that out of respect. But I was watching him coach. I thought he coached really well in that game, even though his team got beat bad.
Well, one of the things I think you have to look at from Colorado, in addition to the still needing help on the blue line, is Nathan MacKinnon will put the puck in the net at a higher rate in the second half, I think, than the first.
You hope. You sure hope. I will say this, Mitch. I agree with what you just said. But the other night when I watched them, and I watched part of their game last night too, as I was watching LA and San Jose, and a little bit of Anaheim and Calgary. But what I have to tell you is that he still looks like there's something missing this year. I don't know if it's because it's more attention. I don't know if it's just because of the pressure. I don't know if it's just he couldn't get out of the blocks quick enough and it's really affecting him. But he's not the same explosive player as he was last year. Right now, anyways. Doesn't mean he can't be, but right now he's not.
Do you think, Pierre, that Colorado, specifically Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh, over-evaluated or put too much of a premium on bringing in veteran players to surround the young guys, guys like Briere and Talbot and Tanguay and Aginla, bringing those guys in maybe slowed them down a bit?
Well, they're not as quick as they were a year ago, but I don't know if it's because of those guys. Jerome's playing really well, and Jerome's playing feisty. Danny's been okay. He hasn't been terrible. And Tanguay's trying his butt off. I'm telling you, he is. So
he's a good player.
I see your point. He is.
Tanguay's a good player. He just always gets hurt.
They're old. Those guys are getting old. And Maxey tries his butt off. I'm telling you, the other night he was doing everything he could in St. Louis to get the team going. They're all trying. It's not that they mail it in, but they are not nearly as quick as they used to be. I would agree with Mitch Gallo on that.
Okay, so Colorado right now is on the outside looking in. We've touched on LA and their issues without Voinov and beyond.
But you can see it, right?
Sure.
Do you not see what I'm talking about?
Again, last night.
Talking about?
Yeah, again last night they got beat. San Jose scored 2 in the third period to beat them 4-2. So, but do you see LA as a factor or not? Do you see Di Lombardi doing something significant? Because this is expectation is high in LA.
If he doesn't do something there, as their team is built right now, I don't believe they will make the playoffs. And I've been telling you that for over a month. So, and it hasn't changed for them. If they make a significant move, upgrade their defense, and get Toffoli and Pearson back at the same level they were before they got hurt, then I think they have a legitimate chance. But if they don't upgrade their defense, I don't think they're going to make it.
Are there two levels of buyers in the West? Like one group of teams that could make a move thinking, heck, we have a really good chance at winning the Stanley Cup this year, and another group that are going to make a move just to squeak in? Or are things so compressed and so tight that you've just got one large group of buyers?
I think everybody in the West thinks if you can get in, because they're taking the LA method, if you can get in, you have a chance because the West is just so stacked. Anything can happen. If you get the wrong first-round matchup and you're St. Louis, all your good work for the rest of the year has been for naught. It's a thing that's happened to them in the last 2 years. If you're Anaheim, and let's just say you finish number one in the West, and let's, for the sake of argument, say you get, I don't know, the LA Kings in the first round. It's a bad matchup for you if they got everybody else back healthy and they're playing the way they're capable of playing. So I think there's a large group of people that want to be buyers in the West. But I can tell you the top teams in the West, they're looking, but they're not going to ruin the integrity of their roster to make one move. And that's from talking to a bunch of different people in the West.
Bill Belichick says, I knew nothing about it. Tom Brady said he didn't alter the footballs. Both spoke live earlier today. That's coming up and more on the Super Bowl following Pierre at 5:35 on Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690.
Quickly back to the blue line. Cadre to Morgan Riley. Jake Gardner. Clarkson is a preoccupation in front. Cadre shoots, scores!
So that cut the lead, late charge. Toronto loses their sixth straight. I'm interested to discuss here this report that they're talking about a long-term deal with Nazem Kadri, when earlier it appeared that he would be one of the guys leaving town.
We'll see about that. I think there's a long way to go before Toronto does anything with any forward. I think the guy they have to get signed is Cody Franson on defense. They lose Cody Franson for nothing, by the way, who's potentially an unrestricted free agent. Then they're in big trouble because they just don't have anything coming. You can see it. They have nothing coming through the pipeline. It's a problem. I mean, they can try to spin control this thing all they want. They can have all their enablers and everybody saying everything will be fine. We'll get this fixed. They can do all that.
Name names. Come on. Who are the enablers?
I'm not saying anything because it's not my job. I don't have to criticize anybody. I'm just telling you what I'm seeing. And the same thing that most of the fans are seeing. This thing has a long way to go before it's fixed. And it's like I told you about the Canadians under the previous management team. Until somebody takes their head out of the sand and wakes up, this thing will never get fixed. Well, the Canadiens ownership got their head out of the sand, and they got things fixed. And until something happens in Toronto, same thing. I'm telling you, it's easy to see.
So last week against San Jose, Joe Thornton takes a slap shot at Dion Phaneuf, and then earlier this week, Dion Phaneuf hits Jordan Staal and then fights Eric Staal. Last night, Phaneuf slew-foots Milan Mikolic, and they get into a fight. Pierre, you've known Phaneuf for a long time. Is this the most frustrated you've seen him as an NHLer?
I you know what? It breaks my heart. I really like Dion a lot. I was there to watch him grow as a player, whether it was in Red Deer, whether it was the two World Juniors, especially the one that they didn't win when they lost in the gold medal game to the Americans to Mark Stewart and Zach Parise and Ryan Kessler and Al Montoya in goal in Helsinki. That's where I was really learned to appreciate what Dion Phaneuf was all about. He was a team guy. He was a hard guy. The one-on-one battles he had with Sidney Crosby in an underground rink in Helsinki were off the charts. I know they had to stop practice once because they were just so intense. And the same thing carried over to Grand Forks, North Dakota. He was a tremendous talent. I remember when he was a rookie living with Brian Marchman, and Marchman was looking after him. And I had coached Marchman in Hartford, and Marchman said to me, "Oh, you'd love coaching this guy." I said, I know I would. I've watched them play. For whatever reason, things have changed for Dion, and obviously we all change over time. And I think he's frustrated. I think he's feeling the pressure. I don't think he's used to being criticized openly like he has been in Toronto. I think that would hurt anybody. It doesn't matter how strong your character is or how strong your mentality is. You get criticized every single day. It's not easy. It's really difficult.
Watching that evolve last night and in the aftermath of what Mitch described, Eric Staal firing the puck at him. He couldn't care less if it had hit him, but it went into the empty net the other night. And, you know, thinking back, Scotty Hartnell yelling at him, the mics picked that up. Has Dion Phaneuf become more hated or disrespected among other players in the NHL? Not that long ago, it seemed like P.K. Subban was that kind of guy.
Well, they were after Subban at the beginning because I think part of the league was like that because they wanted to test his mettle. And the other part is P.K. was his own worst enemy early on in his career. He knows that he maybe talked a little bit too much when he was out on the ice and didn't earn the respect you have to earn to be a great NHL player. I think he's at that point now, and I think part of that was his Olympic experience last year and being around the great players and seeing how they carry themselves and how they interacted with one another. I think that really helped PK a lot in terms of maturity. So Dion has never gone through that. When you think about it, he's been hurt. I mean, he was drafted by a team that really liked him. He's an Albertan kid. He gets traded out of Alberta to Toronto. He never made the Olympic teams. I think that really hurt him. I think it really bothered him, especially 2010, when he still was in pretty much the meat of his career. So he hasn't had nearly the same kind of opportunity to grow his brand only because I think he's been hurt because he hasn't achieved to the level that a lot was expected of him to achieve.
All right, because I just mentioned his name, I wasn't going to ask you about the All-Star stuff until tomorrow, but I'll throw this out at you because you know how I feel about the game.
I do.
But if they are going to have an event that is basically a schmooze fest, right, and it's basically about selling the game and turning some people onto it, who made the decision about filling out the rosters that has P.K. Subban on a beach somewhere instead of there?
Hockey operations. Don't even get me going. I'm so angry about this whole thing. And I understand part, and let's be fair to the people that are part of this, okay, that make these decisions. Every team has to have a representative. And because every team has to have a representative, there are players that are here that are they truly all-stars? Are they really the best at their position in the league? No. But because every team has to have a representative, it affects the ability of the people selecting about who they can have on the team and who they can't. In their right of minds, how could you not have Henrik Lundqvist here? In your right mind, how could you not have P.K. Subban here? In your right mind, how could you not have Erik Karlsson here? In your right mind, how could you not have Max Pacioretty here? I can go down the line in the league.
Well, you would think, Pierre, sorry, you would think, you know, I understand 30 teams, but you also have a skills competition where a jersey of a team can be represented. It doesn't have to be in the game.
We agree. You and I agree on that. But, again, that's a decision that they made at the league office. And for whatever reason, that's what they're living with.
Taves is 0 for 1 lifetime against Fleury in shootouts.
And that was the winner of one of the final games played before the All-Star break. Chicago Blackhawks beat Pittsburgh, NBC Sports Rivalry Night. Pierre, yes, Pierre was there.
Come on. They just froze him. Watch Marc-Andre Fleury's reaction. Jonathan Taves got all kinds of moves going on, and he's just frozen. Paralyzed.
Yeah, he kept that puck in a shooting position the whole way. No stick handling at all.
All right, no shame in losing to the Blackhawks, but as we mentioned yesterday, sluggish, kind of limping into the break, the Penguins. What are they thinking about for the next week?
Getting healthy. Hopefully for them, getting Patrick Hornquist back. Hopefully for them, anyways, getting Blake Como back, which would help them a ton. I think they're going to have issues on defense. I really do. You know, I talked to you about it yesterday. When you look at not having Christopher Letang last night, you don't have Brooks Orpik because he moved. You don't have Matty Niskanen, and you don't have Olli Maatta. That's four guys out of your top six. Try to win with that in any other city. Good luck. So that's a big problem for them. And I'll say it again. I liked some of the acquisitions they made in the offseason, but the chip they had to play in the game was James Neal, and I don't think they got enough back in return. I think if you were going to trade James Neal, you had to bring back somebody that could provide 30 to 40 goals. And I don't think that's going to happen with Spalling and with Hornquist, even though Hornquist was off to a really good start.
So who are you hanging out with tonight in Columbus?
I think our production team, actually. I don't think too many people are here. I was in a car today. It took 3 hours to get here from Pittsburgh to Columbus. And I haven't seen any hockey people here except for our production team.
Oh, you're about to see someone really, really slick. And he is representing the hipster crowd at the All-Star Game in Columbus.
Who would that be?
Connor McKenna.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he will be there all
What's
weekend.
What's he doing there? Is he working?
For 2 hours, he said. He'll be working for 2 hours.
Oh, nice. Good. I'll look forward to seeing him.
Yeah. He'll probably bug you for a 5-minute conversation or something.
That'd be fine.
All right.
Be a pleasure.
Have a
be
great a one, Pierre.
I guess we'll talk tomorrow.
We will talk tomorrow, yeah. We'll talk a little bit about the All-Star game tomorrow, and they'll probably announce the outdoor game with the Canadiens and the Bruins, right?
Yeah, well, that's, I think, already done, which is great. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to doing that. Are you going to come down for that?
Yeah, I don't know. If I'm around. If I'm around, Pierre, it's a long time from now, you know?
What's your take on the Patriots?
What's my take on the Patriots? Let's play the Super Bowl already. I can't. We're going to have another week of this.
It's hard to believe. We've got like the two best teams, two teams that deserve to be there, that are incredibly evenly matched, and we're talking about PSI football pressure in a ball, and it's ridiculous.
Oh, okay. So let me just ask you a question. I played football at a pretty high level, and I don't know why this is such a big deal.
Because it's a big deal because the Patriots have deceived before, and there are a lot of people who hate them. A lot of people hate Belichick. A lot of people hate Tom Brady because he's great. He looks great. He's got a great-looking wife. He's just too perfect, and they hate him because of it.
It's sad. You know, that if you were to talk to most quarterbacks that have played in the NFL or played at a high level of football, they would tell you that this happens all the time. It's out of your control.
Pierre, yeah, I'm sorry, but my favorite quote on this, Dwayne Allen of the Colts. Dwayne Allen of the Colts.
Yeah.
Tom Brady would have beaten us using a bar of soap.
That's true. That's such a good quote. Way to go. Here's the one deal I would say to everybody. Okay, yes, he had a big throwing day. How many yards did they get on the ground? And how does a deflated football affect the runs on the ground?
And oh, yards. that other important part about a quarterback, that a veteran quarterback does, how about reading defenses?
Yeah, well, that without saying, absolutely great point. Doesn't matter. The ball can't be a radar machine and read the defense. That's a great point. There you go, Mitch. Happy birthday, Elmer Locke.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.